Certainly. Everybody?
Miss Percy.
Welcome to the I Want More Comics podcast, recorded at I Want More Comics and Games, a local comic store in Thornton, Colorado. You can reach us by phone at 303-460-7226 or on all social media platforms. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
I Want More Comics and Games podcast. I'm gonna get that right.
One time I'm gonna get that right.
I'm Richie.
I'm Todd.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Keith.
Welcome back, Todd. It's good to see you.
Oh, well, thank you.
This is one of those weird scenarios where we're really strapped for time and everybody's really coming together so we can get this podcast
so
done.
So normal.
Yeah, and there wasn't a ton of news, so we'll get into it. We'll talk about what we have, and we'll go from there. Let's go to it. Excellent. The first one I wanted to throw off right off the bat is on Twitter. Gail Simone threw out a really cool kind of nod to her great work with Batgirl. The show on HBO Max called Titans had kind of introduced a new character. It was basically Oracle. So it was Batgirl past the time of her accident, and she... there's a big reveal in it. And in the show, they show her full name, Barbara Gordon's full name, and her middle name now is Gail. And she thought it was a coincidence. People started, like, tweeting her about it and saying, like, hey, you should go check this out. And then through the writers and creators of the show, including from top down, from DC Comics, they all gave the go-ahead to definitely name her Gail. You got to put respect on the name as they said it. So she lost her mind, did a huge...
would you say that was a geek out?
It was a huge geek out for her. So if you follow her on any of your social medias, I would suggest giving it a read because it's a really cool shout out. Even when she did that in the comment section, all like the creators and editors of DC Comics kind of jumped in and piled on of like how important her run and her definition of what Batgirl is so important. Dan DiDio was one of them right off the bat, was like Oracle or Batgirl, whoever it is. Whenever you write it, it's the real thing. So really incredible stuff. I know that Gail has blessed us with her present in our store, and I wanted to shout out, of course, we support Gail as the middle name for Barbara Gordon. So that's official to me.
It's really nice when you see, you know, a big company like that turn around and give credit out to the mm-hmm. creators. I mean, there's so much about that, you know, you may have these characters created before Gail mm-hmm. came along.
Absolutely.
But her mark is left.
Right. And you can tell that Gail
knows. Her stamp is so known.
Exactly. And Gail knows her stuff. She, like, when she writes her thank you, the first thing she does is mention every single person before her and, like, why it was important. So that was really good. Outside of that, there's a bunch of, like, bubblings of some really big stories, but they haven't broken yet, so I don't want to get into like hearsay and news. So Keith and I decided we would talk about two big releases that the publishers have kind of put out there that websites are picking up, which is December solicits for Marvel and DC.
So let's talk about how this fits in first with the cycle of what we do as a comic book store. Is sure. that this week is when you first see the list of books and you don't even get to see all the art yet, but you do get to see most of the creative teams, named variants, pieces like this. This yeah. is what starts the catalog. Mm-hmm. So here we are, September. We get to see all the books that are releasing during December.
Yes.
And the lists that are put out, you know, again, like I said, you definitely get to pay attention to some number ones. You get to see some creative teams. You get to see if there's some bigger stuff kind of being stamped around. But this is the first time that we hear that this stuff is legitimate and real. Now, next steps for this is that next week, me and Sean focus on the order for the books that come in during November.
Sean's favorite time.
Why?
Because
it's
you...
It's the reoccurring nightmare.
You paid extra for it, Rich. Yeah. That's what this
that's,
is.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you. This is the benefits. This is the benefits package we offer for the industry, you know, and it's this and a razor blade. And hopefully you don't use the razor blade on yourself.
It's just there.
Just it's part of the game. But and then the week after that, we will see these December solicits kind of like on our version inside the system here.
Yeah, the suite to order. So right now I have Marvel up, and I think you do too. So
yep.
We'll talk a little bit about some of the new things coming out. The very first thing that I found from CBRComicBooksResources.com is Chip Zdarsky's Devil's Reign, number 1 of 6. It's Marco Cicchetto and Chip Zdarsky, who have been, just wrecking it on Daredevil right now.
Oh, yeah.
Sean,
that
trying
book is
to
completely
fight
solid.
Me every day. He's trying to.
I'm not fighting
trying
you.
To say that they could possibly be right next to Frank Miller, if not above Frank Miller.
Well, there's a lot of things above Frank Miller.
Nope. Not when we're talking Daredevil, sir.
What about Brubaker?
Nope, he's underneath.
He's totally not.
No, he is so.
So the Batman of the Marvel Universe gets to get into the same kind of arguments that the Batman of the DC Universe gets about who's got long-standing runs, impactful.
Spoiler-free with Daredevil. Obviously, Dzarski and Cicchetto, this is, I believe, their swan song. I think they're coming off of Daredevil mm-hmm. after this event. And this is the culmination of everything they've been building towards. The brief broad points is Kingpin is back in a big bad way. He's using all of his political and social power to finally kind of enact a plan that he's been holding together on vigilante justice since we met him. So he finally has the money, he has the backing and the support of the people to really take on the superheroes of New York. So no one is going to be safe. It is Daredevil centric, but it really is a Marvel Universe problem with Kingpin kind of in the seats playing puppet master. So what are your thoughts on this, Sean?
I honestly think that it's going to be an awesome ride, and we should all get on that train and ride that train.
So you're saying yes?
Yeah.
It threw me off the first time he brings this up, because I was like, wait a minute. Devil's Reign is the crossover in the 90s of Marvel and Top Cow. Right. They're bringing that back?
Yeah.
You're like, wait, what? No. Wait. Okay, no, it's different.
No, we're not. We're not at all.
Did you have one you wanted to bring up?
I can get right to the related one there and all this. That ever since, how many years ago was Batman Black and White? The first one?
God, that's like 20
so
years?
It's first.
Something? It's been a minute.
It's first is in what, Gotham Knights? It's backup stories inside Gotham Knights.
Uh-huh.
And then they turned around and reprinted some of them uh-huh. in a collection, and then they've done a couple miniseries, right?
And then they did 2 miniseries.
Yeah. And then everybody goes, that's a good idea. Let's do that. So we've had Superman, Red, White, and Blue. We've had Wonder Woman, Black and Gold. And on Marvel's side, Carnage Wolverine. And Deadpool.
Yes.
Well, now we have Elektra, Black, White, and Blood.
All right.
Which will be 4 issues, same type of style, little thing there.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I enjoy these small stories because I think the editors allow for a little bit more leeway. As long as they're not hitting into some certain timeline, they can just tell an insane story that has a beginning, middle, and end. It's kind of like
and these usually have more, way more creative freedom than your normal ongoing will have.
Once you let off the chains, I think you can tell some really insane stories, especially with the characters they're picking. Elektra being one of those characters you can really sink into being darker and more brutal, which seems like the line they're going with Carnage and Wolverine and things like that.
These are definitely meant.
Punisher next.
Every one of these I've seen has definitely felt more like an adult themed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these are meant to be that type of grit, and with that, this character matches.
Okay. The next one I have from Marvel is one we kind of talked about with our last podcast, if you just listened to that. It is Timeless, Marvel's Timeless. This is going to be a year-end event that gives us a look into the Marvel Universe over the next 12 months for the next coming year. And shocker, the Marvel Universe is going to have a big problem with somebody called Kang the Conqueror.
It's pretty apt that it's named Timeless then, huh?
Yeah, right.
I'd like to go on a limb and say that this guy will be a villain for a while.
Yeah, so it looks like he's going to be, this is the start of our 2022 adventure in the Marvel Universe, where King is the major player behind the scenes in all parallel dimensions.
It's funny because I don't understand why they haven't dived this deep with this character before.
Well, arguably, I could bring up the fact that Feige had taken over the chief executive creative officer or whatever for Marvel. What was that, a year ago or 2 years ago now, where Feige's in charge? He took over the head seat of Marvel production writing as well. So he's not only in charge of distribution in the film, but he also took over the comics. So this could be the first like showing of what that looks like when everything's tied together. I don't think that they're succinct, like, if you don't read this comic, you're going to miss something in the cinematic universe. But I think that he understands the idea of, like, if I'm going to be doing this in the cinematic universe, we should probably have something in the comic book world that also kind of goes in line with that idea. So people are going to start learning about Kang and understanding about him and maybe wanting to know more. And this will bring more people in to maybe read a comic book or two about the big guy himself. I mean, what did they really do with Thanos during Endgame? It was afterwards.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Thanos stuff was built off of history of the character.
Correct.
Which there was some. Yeah. I think there's considerably less for Kang. And he's got the ability to be a severe baddie because he's,
I don't know if it's that
so
far
multidimensional.
Off.
I don't know.
Because
he was,
you know, Thanos,
he danced around in Avengers quite a bit, but it was like little snippets, man.
Think about where you really got Thanos, because you've gotten, you know, starts off in Iron Man, jumps over and does a couple annuals where he dies a couple times, I guess. Oh. And, you know, he's in Captain Marvel.
Sleeping.
Yeah, he's in Captain Marvel. But then the thing is, Kang probably doesn't have the standalone thing that Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos Quest.
It's curious to me that they didn't do that before, and unless people didn't understand how to write the character.
Avengers Forever is a heavy Kang story. Yeah. There's several other, you know, Kangs inside, you know, like stories inside this. And Kang's very fragmented when you start talking about it, because are we talking about Kang, Rama Tut, Immortius,
so to speak.
Yeah, so that's the design of the character that kind of makes it interesting. So body of work, you might have more appearances of Kang than you have of Thanos. It's possible. I haven't done the math out, but it's possible with that. Thanos always felt probably more significant.
Prominent.
Kang always, to me, had a feeling of a guy who wanted to dabble around, you know, had more intelligence than he could keep him in check. You know how it is, you know, people too smart for themselves.
Right.
Kind of idea. But
well, plus he wasn't really forefront. He was more I'm working behind the scenes.
Yeah, he's very much a manipulator.
Don't see what I'm doing. Right. Yeah. Character too.
So there's a lot of that inside.
I have one more from Marvel, and then I want to go into DC, which I think you're looking up right now, right?
Mm, sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
okay.
Thanks for showing what's behind the curtain there, Richie. We're supposed to look like we know what we're doing here fly by our pants.
Yeah. So we are the next one I have was The Amazing Spider-Man Beyond. So this is, we're bringing back Ben Reilly, which I've heard is super polarizing in the Spider-Man fanverse. I don't think anyone here is a massive Spider-Man fan, right? Anyone? I know, Sean, I know you want to talk about Spider-Man a lot, but outside of Sean, I don't think any of us are real Spider-Man fans.
Sean just hopes that, you know, Derek Gould gets out of his way.
Yeah, so we could just have Spider-Man.
Just have Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's the street-level character Sean likes.
Correct. And I believe that because he was like, Daredevil was crap until Spider-Man was in it. Isn't that what you said?
Oh, that's, yeah, that's so what I said.
Yeah.
And then he quit reading for 150 issues because Spider-Man didn't show up.
So this is a new era for Spider-Man. Again, new teams are taken all over for the character, and now they've split him up into three different Spider-Men, which is going to be Peter Parker, we have Ben Reilly, and Miles Morales. All three are going to be going, but this one, Beyond, is focused on him. The Beyond Corporation paid a lot of money for Spider-Man and the trademark in the future, and they're trying to see if they can stop this menace that's running around as they're an unlicensed Spider-Man. So it looks like a really funny adventure. It doesn't look like it's taking itself as seriously as potentially the other Spider-Man groups. Unfortunately, I'm not.
So you're saying it's not a huge jab at like big corporations or anything?
I'm sure it is. I don't know the writer, and I'm going to wreck his name.
No, that's not so bad. It's the Saladin Ahmed.
Do you know that writer at all?
I definitely have seen the credit. I can't put it
In my head. I feel like I've seen the credit before, but this is definitely something. Hopefully this will bring his name to light, and I'll know him really
well. Yeah, we'll go back and like, oh, wait a minute, that was the thing. Yeah.
So that's the writer, Carlos Gomez on the art. The storyboard looks pretty good. They have a few like panels on the website, CBR, if you want to take a look. Might be interested if you're a Spidey fan. So what do we got for DC releasing?
Did you look up the DC stuff?
I haven't looked.
Done this. So let me try to pitch Richie and see if we can get him into some DC comics.
That's going to be a
How about that? You
I'm in,
suggest
Todd.
Batman?
Thank you.
Batman?
Yep, I'm in. Let's go.
While related.
Yes.
Robin.
Ooh.
Well, there's a lot of wasn't that last month? Like, it's going to be November where it's all Robins all the time. There's like Robin and Batman is a new title. There's the Robins. It's all over the place. Can I interest you in this? Here's the pitch. Also exploding out of Fear State next January comes a new 12-week event, Shadows of the Bat.
Okay.
From Eisner, Harvey, and Ingat's award-winning writer Mariko Tamaki.
Yes. Currently
and artists,
doing Detective Comics, amazing.
Artists involved in this are Ivan Rice,
ooh,
Danny Mickey, Max Rayner,
yes,
Amanke Nahulapan.
Sure,
I really murdered that. Jordy Belair.
Okay.
So, out of the ashes of Arkham Asylum, Arkham Tower rises in Gotham City, but the tower soon falls to the inmates, and Batman's allies are drawn back into the madness in the heart of Gotham, and the plans of the mysterious Dr. Ware.
100% in.
But wait a minute. But wait.
Sean's making faces.
I understand that this is not a video. I get that, and not everybody's here live and all this, and they can't see this. So, Sean, I need you to describe to me if Richie shows approval or disapproval over this cover. Ready, Richie?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Huh.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
He might need a moment.
That main cover is pretty good looking there and all this. And it obviously shows that we're going to focus upon. Can you name all those bad people?
Let's see.
Which movie is that
Sandra
based off
Cain,
of?
Sandra Cain, Spoiler, Nightwing, Batwoman, Huntress, and Oracle?
Probably. I don't know these people. I was giving you the try.
I'm not sure who the top person was. It could have been
12-issue event will also feature backup stories written by Matt Rosenberg with art by Fernando Blanco, which explores Arkham's dark history.
I'm not going to lie.
How deep are you in on this?
I'm happy you're telling me more, but you had me at Shadow of the Bat. So yeah,
I understand that. But, you know, like this actually sounds, again, 12-issue weekly series.
Yeah.
Sounds very interesting, impactful pieces like that.
And I like those quick bangers out. That's good. It'll be done quick.
Yes, DC does put out a lot of Bat-related titles.
That is correct.
I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Batgirls, but it is a title that everyone should pay attention to.
I agree.
And you've
kind of had hints of the people in that, Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain kind of teaming together, mm-hmm. working for Oracle. Mm-hmm. And you've had hints of that in Future State. They've been around in Detective Comics and Nightwing. So if you like that kind of aspect, I think it'll be an easy jump in point.
Written by Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad, art and cover by Jorge Corona.
Yeah.
So it's not a hard sell to get people into that one. It's there. The other one, well, we did talk about this one and all this. And,
I wanted to bring that
and
one up.
Richie, and this is going to be, again, we're not trying to throw all softballs up to Sean.
sure.
But Sean, can I interest you in Swamp Thing Green Hell DC Black Label by Jeff Lemire?
I mean, yeah.
Can we say no? I know your instinct is.
Jeff Lemire, Doug Mankey, and David Baron.
Well, Lemire already proved his chops in writing Swamp Thing in the first place anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, we're talking about a guy who's got some history with this. It's another one of the Prestige Plus large size 3-issue series.
Yeah. It'll be good.
Yeah, I think that that's there.
You're fools if you don't pick it up. Yes. How about that?
Yeah, we don't have to spend a lot of time on pitching this. This one is going to come out of the blue.
Yeah.
And everyone that I've seen that has seen this thing has an interest level to this. And I do believe it speaks a little bit more to the long-term comic people and all this. But we are going to have a new 6-issue limited series called the One Star Squadron.
Yeah.
And pictured on your cover and all this, you've got Red Tornado, you've got Power Girl, you've got several other people I can't name because I don't know all these people and all this. So I can scroll down a little bit and see what it is. But
That's Two Dimensional Man. That might be wild. These are B, maybe C, even into D. Gangbuster, Minuteman, Red Tornado. Wow. Okay. Yeah. These are bottom barrel superheroes.
But as we've seen, sometimes when you put a team together like this, you come up with the sum is greater than the parts.
Gail Simone famously did it with Secret Six.
Written by Mark really Russell, good. Art and cover by Steve Lieber.
Yeah.
Who Steve had just, he had done not too far in the past, the Jimmy Olsen, mm-hmm. Superman's pal.
I actually consider Steve Lieber a friend of the store, too.
He's a super nice guy. Insanely nice and kind to us.
Steve Lieber is a friend to almost all stores.
All stores, yeah.
He's very pro comic book store. We appreciate that from Steve. Yeah. We get postcards from the guy
all the time.
And
he sent us one for, I think, Jimmy Olsen. We sent that out. He did one for, what was the dog one with the heist that they did?
Are you talking the Image title, right?
Yeah.
I know what you're
beagle.
Talking about, and
they
I can see
the beagle.
I could see the covers in my brain, and the title is not coming
but
to
my
face.
But he sent a postcard for that, and that one we actually had to order for him. But then we did one for Jimmy Olsen, which was just kind of like, of course we're going to order that. And he still sent us a card saying thank you for supporting him.
Yeah.
How good he is.
Yeah, creator that I would pay attention to in all this because he's there. But again, this is a wild little story here, and a ragtag group of heroes led by the Red Tornadoes here to provide services with a smile. All you have to do is send a request via their on-demand hero app, and they'll answer any call.
Nice.
Yes.
It was called The Fix, by the way.
The Fix.
The Fix. Well done. Yes, so this really interests me. I like the idea of looking at taking it not so seriously, too, and using superstars. It feels very James Gunn-ish or, Taiki Waititi or, I'm going to ruin the name, but
yeah.
It's that that flavor of understanding that comics have a
you
humor to them.
You just call them Korg, right?
Korg, yes. But you have,
interesting.
It's like not taking them so seriously and giving them real consequences, but having a humor about it, I think, adds to easy content to consume. So I'm very excited about it.
So another book that Lieber did that I didn't realize he did, Whiteout with Greg Rucka.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow, look at
until
that.
Just now when I looked up the fix and I was like, wow, I'm dumb.
That's a really, really good book, too.
Yeah, I love that book.
All right, well, there you go. That's going to end our news, and I think we'll move right into our reviews since we're talking about comics. And I'm going to go ahead and start with Sean Anderson.
Well, who's that?
I don't know. I thought you knew who that was. Mr.
Matrix so 4. Just to continue on the road of Jeff Lemire.
Shocking.
It's real shocking here. We're going to go with May's book from last week, which is a very interesting, very introspective book about loss.
Okay.
Because Jeff Lemire's real good at that stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're on the road you're on and you know this road, why
somebody
not keep driving down it?
Somebody that hadn't read a synopsis at all said, oh, Lemire's doing a May's book? That's going to be the saddest May's ever.
And
like,
they're
right.
pretty spot on.
I would not.
So, I did like this book a lot. I think at the end of it, it'll be one you'll want to reread because he's known for putting little nuggets here and there just for stuff for you to discover. But I don't know, Lemire. I don't know that I've read anything that I didn't like that Lemire did.
Yeah, that is
so this
a
is a
find.
Super softball to me to say, yeah, 4 out of 5 buns or 5 yeah. out of 5 buns.
Hot
I mean,
take.
Yeah,
Lemire's good.
Lemire's good, dude. It always goes back to when I met him at Dink and I asked him, how do you write so much stuff? And he goes, I don't do anything else.
Yeah.
I don't play video games. I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies. I write comic books. This is what I do.
It's what I do.
I write and draw comic books. I'm like, oh, okay. So if this is all you do, you better put out some good work. And the man really does.
Yeah, he does. I agree 100%. So you're saying 5 out of 5, 4 out of 5?
Yeah, it's Lemire, dude. Whatever. Yeah. It's starting to become like Bun almost to me where it's going to be fine.
Excellent. I'm going to take the second one. Mine's going to be quick. I did Blue and Gold, number 2. DC Comics finally brought back my favorite duo, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
You want to hear something funny about that?
Go ahead.
I forgot to grab issue 2.
Whoa.
Nice.
So there you go.
Ryan Sook is killing it with the art, but Dan Juergens truly, I think, is the one that keeps the heart of those that pair and that couple together, because it should work like a buddy cop movie. The basis of the comic is, you know, they want to be part of the Justice League. They want to get in the big group again, and they actually save the Justice League together. And when offered, basically the Justice League went, "Listen, we'll take you, Blue Beetle, but we can't take Booster." And Blue Beetle goes, "I'm not leaving my friend," and they decide to do their own thing. And because of that foil, the alien that was trying to kill the Justice League, that had him in his grasp, is now avenging, and that's where this comic's going to go. It's a quick six-parter, I think. But that's all I need for Booster and Beetle to really carry me into an adventure. Is they always try to put together like this weird side business, a little bit like the One Star Squadron that's coming out. I think if you're into that, you should definitely move over to that when this is going on. But I can't wait to see where it goes. Number two is just as gangbusters as number one was. High action, great humor. And it's not over-the-top obnoxious like Deadpool is. It's real, like, subtle humor within a superhero world. It never loses track of where it should be. And that is all Dan Jurgens. So, of course, he's a great writer. I give it a 3.75 buns out of 5. That said, it's if you're interested, I think you should pick it up. Obviously, if you're not a Booster Beetle fan, you're not going to care about this. So I keep it at that level. But if you are interested, you should definitely buy it. It's not a bad one. So that's where I'm at with that. Keith, did you do anything?
So I ran into a problem.
I know you did.
So the problem I have is that my read pile for the week is stuff we've covered. And I don't like just hitting the same things over and over again. So I'm going to do quick hit honorable mentions.
Go for it.
So Seven to Eternity came out with a trade paperback, number 4 on that one. That's a great place to catch up.
I picked that one up.
Yeah.
That's if you haven't read it at all.
Yeah.
All 4 trades are available and you should read it.
Very well worth it. We talked, we've already talked about last book you'll ever read. Number 2 was out on that one. And I had a third one on my list that I skipped over somewhere.
Get it, let us know.
I'll try to throw
it
in here.
I'm going to slide into Todd over here and let you know that he actually read some this time.
I read things a lot of the time.
He does.
Actually, he reads probably more than the rest of us. But.
But I did the homework this week.
You did.
And I cheated a little bit, I guess. Because,
only a little.
Deep Beyond Volume 1 trade came out, so it's the first half of the story. It's going to be 12 issues total.
But I like bringing up the fact that trades are also new at certain times, and people can read in trade paperback format. So it's important to me that you understand that single issues are a thing, but also trade paperback buying and reading is just as important. So please continue.
And I only read the trades. I don't read single issues as they come out. And I hear from people all the time, including those of you sitting around the table, that you'll end up with a stack of things that you're waiting until a story arc's complete.
Yeah.
To go ahead and read it. And so I just read the trades, which get me the complete story arcs or whole story at one time.
Right.
As this isn't something I'm collecting. And I think the people that are picking up all the single issues, the variant covers.
I am collecting.
Like Richie, are collecting. And it's something they enjoy for the collectability, while I enjoy it for the story part of it.
For sure.
So Deep Beyond hits a lot of tropes for me that I enjoy. We're in an alternate future that's somewhat post-apocalyptic, science fiction, aliens, alternate timelines, so time moving faster in an alternate dimension, government with an agenda that may not be the best for the people that they're governing. There's a lot of things going on in this story that make it fun for me, so I definitely enjoyed that. Additionally, I think the art is really additive. The artist is Bricardo, who I first ran into in the Screaming Citadel Doctor Aphra crossover.
Okay.
And so when I was flipping through the book, the art caught my eye, and that's where it came from. So the art on it is very additive to me, which, again, for me, as someone that's reading more for these stories, it's important to me that the art is adding to the story, not something that I'm having to get through. And we've had that discussion internally between us that art sometimes for me is enough that if I'm not enjoying the art, it doesn't matter how good the story is. Mm-hmm. So I thought this one was well done, and I will definitely pick up the second trade when it comes out and finish the story.
Excellent.
It's so really interesting on Deep Beyond as I watch, again, I watch the stats of sales. It's increasing. And it's one that I think many people are referring to other people and getting more people into. and it is definitely not losing any readership, and I'm watching the numbers that we sell of individual issues go up. So that also speaks well of a book as an ongoing story.
Well, and the creator, and I don't follow the creative teams like you guys will, but Andolfo, I think I've got it right, mm-hmm. is apparently a rising star on the creative team.
Yes. Oh, she's blowing the hell out of it.
Yes.
Right. So I think that there's, you know, as some of you follow creators, she's one that people are maybe latching onto because she's on this and they've found her from somewhere else.
Because recently, what was it? Was it Mercy? It was yes. that the mm-hmm. Mercy, Sweet Paprika is going on right now.
Sweet Paprika is their new one.
Has done a couple things for Ablaze.
Yeah, and that has nothing to do with all the variants that she's finding.
Like she's also
on.
An artist yeah. too. So it she seems to be the double threat there that she can deliver on both sides. And you know what, Richie, I did find my other one.
What was it?
I think it was deliberately hiding from me because it makes us look like we're know what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
But the other one that I think that's worthwhile reading right now that came out last week was Shang-Chi number 4.
Uh-huh. There you go. Yes. Yes. All right.
So.
Yeah, and we have.
What does that mean?
What? Well, okay. So what that means is that actually reminds me.
What does that mean?
We should spin the racks. Spinning the racks. Da-da-da. 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 Da-da-da.
Da-da-da. Da-da-da. Spinning the racks. Everybody's favorite bumper music.
So now that everybody's calmed down, we are going to talk about Shang-Chi. Is how I'm going to say it.
Yeah, I already said it wrong in this podcast here. So we all need to get retrained.
We do, and
it's been decades of saying it the other
decades.
Way. So.
Part of our business lies heavily in the concept of what pop culture is kind of. Bleeding into the masses, and Marvel Cinematic Universe could be argued one of the biggest influencers of direct to sales kind of things. What people are looking for, whether that's a Grogu, whether that was Iron Man or Black Widow in the time, they really know how to move their story forward in the cinematic realm, and it also always bleeds down to us. So what I like about that tie-in is it fits very well. We don't sell movies here, okay? But we absolutely do sell everything that kind of encapsulates those movies and what brings those to light and what people may or may not like about those films. And you guys before were tied to films as well. You used to do like movie releases and things like that. I think we talked about it on one of the podcasts. I don't know if do we talk about it on a podcast or just chat about
Walking Dead?
No, yeah,
I think
Dead.
We mentioned The Walking Dead stuff at Cinnabar and all this before. Yeah.
Right. So a couple weeks ago now, so this will be spoiler heavy. I'm going to warn you guys ahead of time. If you haven't seen Shang-Chi, go ahead and pause this here. Go check it out and then come back, or wait and then come back to this podcast at this moment, and we'll go from there.
Or if you have massive amnesia, you can listen now.
Yeah, and then just go. Just
experience it for the first time again later.
Those are for only the people that are worried about spoilers. If you're not, enjoy. We're going to spoil the crap out of the movie, and we're going to talk about our thoughts. Each one of us have seen the movie, yes? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Shang-Chi, just a basic info here, was created in 1973 with... debuting in Special Marvel Edition number 15. He is the master of Kung Fu and Brother Hand, and he is basically the movie kind of tries to explain that. So when you guys came into the movie, did anyone have any expectation? Because I know, like, obviously, even if you were a massive Marvel fan, I don't think Shang-Chi was, like, your big number one hero. Anyone here, like, really had any heartfelt attachment to the character?
I did not.
Yeah.
I think the only stories I've ever read with him in comics were some small arcs in Avengers.
Okay.
Like it's
probably the same for me.
Yeah.
I have not read a lot of
I actually enjoyed that part. I enjoyed being walking in and knowing full well I couldn't argue, in my head would never argue a single plot point and say, that's not right.
Yeah. And that's I did kind of feel like that was nice. I didn't have this weight on my shoulder of expectation. Like, I was like, oh, God, here we go.
Another Batman movie.
I'm
going
to have to figure out what's... am I going to like this? Am I going to be mad? Am I going to have to... I should mention that it was Steve Englehart and Jim Starlin created Shang-Chi.
Always credit.
Yeah, always credit them. So, yep. But going into the film, I was very open-minded and wanted to see what we were going to get. For you guys, tell me your initial thoughts on the show. Do you feel like they did the things right? Did it engage you? We'll go from there, and then I'll break down into a little bit of the characters and things like that. Keith, why don't you start us?
Okay. I was thoroughly entertained.
Okay.
So first level for me on anything like this is always going to be, did I enjoy my 2 hours?
Right.
Yeah, I got to that easy.
Okay.
I really did. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, when I start thinking about the layers and the levels inside the movie and all this, I thought actually, like, plot-wise, it moved along pretty well. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. Characters, it developed pretty well. And attachment to different characters and all this, I thought was done really well. I was really pleased.
Okay, excellent. And then Sean, who Chong Chi named himself after, what did you think?
Okay. No, I actually dug it a lot. I like, well, in general, I like martial arts movies anyway.
Same.
So I grew up watching tons of stuff from the 70s and early 80s. And I dug all that stuff. I didn't read a lot of martial arts books, obviously, because I wouldn't know more about the character if I did.
Right.
So I failed miserably in that aspect. But the movie itself entertained the hell out of me, and I felt like I learned a lot about a character I probably should have known a lot more about.
Right. The first place, right.
Yeah, I really do feel that way. Mm. And I like the use of all the other characters in the movie. I like Michelle Yao a lot. She's just badass.
Yeah.
So agreed. Her in the movie is always... I'm like, hey, bonus, this is sweet.
Here we go.
And I know that the dragons at the end they're digital dragons, obviously, because yes. There's not real ones.
What?
But I know, right?
Don't lie to me like that.
Spoiler
alert. I thought they were done cool. I thought they were really cool.
Yeah.
So I like the way they moved. I like the way they fought. I like the way that whole sequence actually went down. It was very, very cool. Yeah. I don't know. I like the mythology. I like the lore. I like the character. It made me want to kind of check out the character a little more, honestly.
Excellent.
So,
and Todd, what about you?
Well, I'm about to disappoint everyone that listens to my normal movie reviews because I really liked it.
He actually liked it. Yeah.
Guffaw.
I know. It's like Mikey, right?
Yeah.
Had to happen once.
So I thought the movie was really well done. Mm-hmm. Some of the best choreography I think they've done in Marvel movies. The initial fight scene between his parents mm-hmm. was maybe the best choreographed fight scene I've seen in a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. I thought the character was a lot of fun. I didn't know anything about the character to start with. I did like all the side characters in the movie. I think his best friend... portrayed by Awkwafina.
Yes.
Katie. Katie, that's right. I think she was really great. Could have just been there for comedic relief and uh-huh. ends up being a real character. At the end of the movie, as she's in the end battle, is an important character.
Yeah.
And she could have just been throwaway comic relief. I think Ben Kingsley, his appearance.
Trevor. Yep.
I think that was also something that could have just been throwaway comic relief and really added to the movie, his presence in it. Mm-hmm. Sean brought up the dragons at the end of the movie, but it wasn't just the dragons. It was the other characters or the other creatures in the valley there that they lived in, all coming from Oriental mythology.
Oh, yeah. They were all awesome.
And portrayed in a very authentic way, which was great to see. As Keith was talking about the levels of the movie, the message of equality is very strong through it, which I think is especially important towards, you know, with the Chinese community right now, where things stand in this country sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So having that there in the equality of women can do what they want was very important. So I thought the movie was well done on just about every level. I don't think it's the best Marvel movie that they've done in the cinematic universe, mm-hmm. but I don't think they did anything wrong in
it. And, yeah, that's a great breakdown of that. I'm kind of the same way. I'm huge into Marvel movies, of course, but I am a sucker when it comes to anything ninja. Anything ninja, I'm in.
Richie, what happened at the end of the movie when we all went out?
I tried to karate kick Sean because I got hyped. But that's what happened.
How did that work out for you?
I knocked you down.
Did you try and karate kick him? Like,
this is a podcast.
So when you hit your head, you must remember things a lot different than I do.
This is a podcast, so I can make it whatever I want.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I kicked him about 4 feet It was pretty good.
Wow.
Knocked him right off his ass.
It was that's good. Is that the podcast is going to be over in like 20 minutes and we're going to yeah. need to see a replay, aren't we?
but no, it was a phenomenal movie. And I did want to bring up the choreographing was something I think is when you talk about a film that's going to do martial arts, I might be the only one here that actually watched Snake Eyes, the film.
That is highly likely.
Yes. The reason I watched Snake Eyes, the film, is because it had ninjas in it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not a big Snake Eyes fan, but of course I like Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow because they were the ninjas of G.I. Joe. So I went and I checked that out. And so I had it to compare when we went to Marvel. Now, one of the things you can argue is Marvel has money. But genuinely, if you look at the history of martial arts films, money is not the issue. It's talent. Especially in the old 70s martial arts things, it was about you can get away with making anyone a martial artist by basically camera cuts. And your situation is how many cuts in a fight scene are they doing to show you how athletic the actor is playing the character. And in Snake Eyes, the cuts are crazy. You're like, there's a foot, there's an ankle, there's an elbow, it's just everywhere. There's a sword. He's stabbing. I think he's stabbing a guy. Whereas in Shang-Chi, it is, you know where you're at all times. You constantly know everything's centered on the two combatants. And if the camera is moving, the camera's moving with them to show you more angles of the actual artistry going on. Well, mostly like a violent dance.
They have wire work down.
Oh, so good.
Way better than anybody else. Yeah. So.
But that's, you can put money into wire work. You can put money into the CGI that's going to put you, but a lot of the old films didn't even have CGI. These were just people literally dancing in crazy movements with little fake swords. So I genuinely cared about this. Director was Destin Daniel Cretton, which I tried to look up his IMDb, and honestly, I'm not aware of any of his previous film works. I've never seen a ton of them, but genuinely, I think he went through that history and kind of picked up on the things that worked and meshed it all together. We had true martial arts choreography. We had excellent wire work and insane CGI that all that combined just created this really compelling eyeball stretching kind of cinematic experience. The story of Awkwafina and his friend, I was kind of with Todd, and I'm now an Awkwafina fan. I think that she has the capability to be obnoxious if you look at her history in film or television, and she played it with a nuance that needs a real talent. It's not just I can be obnoxious. It's more like when, you know, John Leguizamo was doing like The Pest versus when he goes into other things where it requires humor but not that in-your-face obnoxiousness.
I didn't know anything about her.
Oh yeah,
until
yeah.
this movie.
Well, and I saw that, and I was very concerned about it. I don't like the character on TV. I'm not going to say necessarily. I get what you're saying with obnoxious, but the reality is that's the character being played.
Yes,
it's not my flavor. Yeah. More than she's bad.
Yeah,
she's not a bad actress. Right. In when she plays the character, I don't like. It's just I don't like
that.
Well,
that was my
and it was just
too.
Dumb. And then when I saw this, I thought that. She gets to keep some comedic elements, but delivers it appropriately. And again, one of the big mixes inside this movie that made me enjoy it was you had a good balance between, you know, plot and comedic punch-up.
Yes.
And another fun part was the synergy with the Marvel Universe. It's something we get to see more and more now in all the future Marvel properties because they now have this huge foundation built.
Yeah.
So when we randomly come in here and have the Abomination versus Wong in all this and just out of the blue, and you're just like, oh, just, these are characters I know, and I know that they run in the same universe, and this is funny, this is great, and they get to use this. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It's fun.
It's very cool, yeah. And to add on to that, how much is that like comic books, especially in the Marvel Universe?
Sure.
They do it all the time in comic books because Marvel owns all the characters, so they're like, we need some type of monster.
We're just going to plug and play. He's going to go here.
Yeah, here you go. That's
inside that, they had one of the best synergistic moments, plot lines brought into this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our good friend Ben Kingsley.
Yes, yes.
This was an amazing, this, you know what? People think that this is oversimplification. This almost just redeems Iron Man 3.
Yeah,
Yeah, it just straight up.
Well, and
what's your take on Iron Man 3, Sean?
I hate it.
Hate it?
Yeah.
What about you, Todd?
I don't hate it.
Okay.
I hate it. I can't stand it.
But they also released on Disney Plus the short that was on Thor Ragnarok. It was like a 15-minute short with Ben Kingsley in it. If you have Disney Plus, you could watch this short, and it explains how he gets kidnapped.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the terrorist, the actual film. That was really cool to see that, and then go see, you know, Shang-Chi and be like, oh, that's awesome.
I didn't hate Iron Man 3.
Okay.
I'm not going to make any defense in the movie and say it's good or anything like that. I didn't hate it. I cackled over the idea of what they did with the Mandarin. I thought it was funny. I was like, ha-ha, this is really kind of cool about relating it how it could be in our world. I know that there was lots of people that hated that idea.
See, I actually liked that idea, but I didn't like the rest of the movie.
Trevor was always pretty good.
I have some problems with RDJ's direction on that concept, but to that point, and keeping it towards Shang-Chi, that Mandarin shift, and all the names on these are going to be difficult for me, so I apologize in advance. But Tony Leung Chiu-Wai is the actor that played the master, or Shang-Chi's father, who they deem Mandarin. But he doesn't necessarily go by that name. But I loved them going back and kind of addressing the fact that when Shang-Chi was created, even with the best of intentions, there's some type of appropriation with those concepts, and they're trying to like really beat those down to the fact of us just saying Shang-Chi forever. And you know, that's what you do. It's not a political stance when you're reading by yourself, just kind of phonetically pronouncing a name. But when you hear a correction, it shouldn't be a defense mechanism for you. And when he says, like, well, they were making up names, and somebody that didn't really understand our culture just kind of said Mandarin, and everybody was pissed off about an orange. That's brilliant.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. They have so many elements inside that are just well put together.
Yeah. The actor, though, that was playing Mandarin was so great. He gave you a lot of emotion, a lot of power. Yeah, the father. And it was
he's good anyway.
Which is a huge amalgam. I went looking on this to try to like see where this was, like reading up some wiki bits and pieces like that. It's a huge amalgam of several characters that have existed.
Yes.
Because
they kind of slammed together.
Shang-Chi's father is Fu Manchu, in the comics. And it's an amalgam of some of the pieces of that. But like some of the core story about crime lord and bits and pieces and Shang fighting against that.
Yeah.
That's more core to the character.
Yeah.
And like there's a lot of respect for like I have no problem if you're gonna set up in a new universe, a new set of rules. You know, the big deal is that you stay true. Why would you call a character one thing and then use nothing of that character? Well, no, they did. They used quite a bit of elements there, and it delivered well.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, it happens with like The Boys did it very well, where they changed a lot of their politically fueled things, because within 10 years of making a film from the print, politically and just the zeitgeist of our community can completely change. So it can do that in 5 years, let alone 10. I'm seeing bits of that with Why the Last Man, and with Shang-Chi, I felt a lot of that was they kind of looked at what had been created and the reasons why in the 70s, and now have adjusted that to a modern age feel and emotion, and then gave you the best accurate depiction they could with even adding elements. I mean, the change for the actual Ten Rings was incredible to me. I like the concept of like 10 powerful elemental rings that you can kind of shoot spells out with. That seems cool. But to picture them as giant bracelets that kind of do these epic battle moves, that was insane.
If you brought a movie and put 10 rings that had all these little different powers based upon each rings, how much would that just feel like Infinity Stones? And that you're just rolling the same thing over and over again.
Let's do it again.
Whereas now we do something completely different off the base, and you're able to turn around and not.
They look like giant keys is what they seem to be. They're looking at those rings and looking at, that's a key to a weird door.
Yeah, there's your thing. Like when you turn around and get left as you are with the first after credit scene, there's more to the rings than what we see.
Yes, there is. So going into that, any any part of the movie that you guys took with you that were like, oh, that's sweet. I hope we see more of that. Does this get you excited for more movies in the cinematic universe based on what you saw? What do you feel? Do you guys feel like this movie was worth going to the theater in this day and age of times where, you know, that's a potential? Like, was it worth your money going to the theater and enjoying
absolutely
that?
I think it was worth the money.
Yeah.
I think seeing it in the theater was worth the experience for sure.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I did go see this in the theater, and it's the first movie I've seen in a long time in
yeah.
a theater. And I went early in the day and didn't have anyone sitting within 20 feet of me, right. which was nice.
Yeah.
That being said, I would have been comfortable watching this at home if it had gone to streaming immediately, like I did with Black Widow.
Right.
And I don't think that I get enough from going to the theater that if I had had the option, I would have watched it at home.
Yeah. My question more skewed to the point of like with all the problems. Like for me, every time when I saw Snake Eyes, right, the entire time I was watching Snake Eyes, I was going, am I risking my life for this? Like,
yeah. So here's the thing. I would have been happy paying for it either way.
Yeah.
But I would have been as comfortable and had the same experience, to be honest, just watching it at home. I don't personally have the need to see things on the big screen. Yeah.
I have a friend who watches, has to go to the theater.
Sure.
It's like a weird addiction.
Same.
We've got people that work here that have to go to the theater.
Yeah.
I don't have that either. Yeah. Like you, well, I'm just as fine and comfortable being at my house. But I will say a movie like Blade Runner.
Yes.
The audio in Blade Runner.
that was the audio.
We played a different game like, with that one because we were in like the Dolby Super.
But that particular
I got a free massage off of that.
We all did.
That particular viewing was like, insane because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, did you get
that immersive
experience?
No,
it's Shang-Chi? Not necessarily.
No, it's definitely more immersive when you're.
Immersion
when you're,
is what I'm talking
yes.
about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're talking about like were you worried about
it,
your safety or whatever?
Does it melt away the problem?
Well, when they're in the bus. And they're doing the old boy scene in the bus. Yes. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm cool.
I'm all right. Yeah,
but I think that the movie itself was enough to be immersive, whether I was sitting on my couch or in a theater seat. So from that, there's definitely movies that I've seen at home that I'm like, well, I'm going to get up and go get something out of the refrigerator or whatever. I don't think that would be the case with this movie. I think 100%. I would have sat through it.
You would have
been engrossed. Yeah, I was there for the long haul.
Absolutely. What about you, Keith? Did you?
Well, it's real funny because I think about that question, and here it is. I've spent money on a nice recliner at home that should be very comfortable that I never use. Yeah, I never do it. I never get there because I'm just playing video games I don't play on my recliner and all this. Mm-hmm. I'm think of me as a PC gamer, even though I'm just a filthy cheater. I got to show you a chat log from last night about that one. And the roommate's got a really nice TV. He bought a new 65, 70-inch really nice TV, and it looks really good, and the blacks are really great. But at the same point, there is a preference I have to.
Did you say 70-inch?
I think something right. ridiculous.
Okay, yeah.
It's just dumb. Like
got distracted.
And you know what? You know, it looks really good while you're watching TV, you know, like reality TV shows and things like that. But I just don't – I enjoy the theater experience. I do. Excellent. And – yeah, you know, this world's different. I get it, and I definitely think that it's a tipping point for some people that, you know, because if there wasn't any concerns out there, you know, would people feel, you know, differently? Absolutely. You'd have some people that slide that scale, and again, it works that way. For me, I also make movies more of an event. Like, I don't really care about watching a movie that as much as going with my friends and catching the movie. I get a little bit more in the theater experience than I do, absolutely. Than even inviting a couple people over.
Excellent.
That's it. But I think that either way, I would have still, if I had not been able to see it in a theater and it was coming out, I would have watched it at home. I still would have enjoyed it at home.
All right. So now that unfortunately, we got to end this timing wise. So what I would like real quick is just a thumbs up review. You're now Siskel and Ebert.
They're not going to see our thumbs, man.
You can tell them two thumbs up.
Good Lord.
I mean, you can. I'll tell them if you just.
You don't know if you're on the stream or if you're on a podcast, and you don't know if people are watching us.
I don't know where I'm at ever
right now.
Okay, so two thumbs up, one thumb down. What do you like?
Two thumbs up,
Sean.
Two thumbs.
Tom. Yeah, absolutely, two thumbs up.
Same. That is a lot of thumbs up. Definitely go see this movie. We highly suggest it.
You know, if Bun did movies.
we could do buns, but we can't.
It'd be five buns up.
Yeah. Well, that's just not what we want to do at all.
Now we've that picture. I'm going to mark this one explicit content for that.
Yeah, you should.
I win.
And did you want to bring up the...
Well, so, you know, this was also a... We've been approached by Regal Cinema.
Yes.
To start working on going back to where we were about putting out events.
Yes.
And we were very, very close to getting that put together for Venom.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen fast enough. We got a little bit late into the game on that one. And when they moved the date up, it kind of threw disarray about us getting
tied to Shang-Chi, actually, because Shang-Chi did such a good job with the box office that
they moved it up.
They were like, okay, kick it up. People want to go see these movies.
So
why it's hot.
We, as I Want More Comics and Games, are looking very much to turn around and partner with Regal Cinemas to be able to offer out our own private screenings, likely down at the Denver Pavilions is what we're looking at right now.
Because that's the closest Regal to us.
And likely at, I think, is with a really good price, too. So we're getting all the details together for this. We'll have seating, assigned seating. We will have a program for this. It's coming together, and I think that the next... comic book movie that we're looking at is Eternals.
That is correct.
I think Eternals is before, it is before Spider-Man.
Yes.
Okay. So we're looking at putting that together and getting seats, and we will have a program that's available for you to be able to get your tickets reserved here and get the whole thing done.
Just an absolute another reason why we should be chatting about movies, and I cannot wait to experience movies with the people that listen to this podcast. But we'll have to wait until we get all the details, so keep an eye on our social media.
It'll be shortly. We definitely want to turn around and have all the details out several weeks before we're doing it, so everybody can plan.
Yes, exactly. So we got to head out. We will definitely be back as soon as we can for the next episode. Until then, I'm Richie.
I'm Todd, and we could be responsible, or...
Sean.
Or
karaoke man.
Karaoke.
Oh, let's karaoke. I'm Sean.
There you go.
And I'm Keith.
We'll see you next issue.